This is ESPN Radio.
Fourth quarter here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Get at us on the Twitter, on the Dr. Pepper Twitter line, at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canty 99. As I mentioned before, Mike, this is an overreaction Monday, so a lot of people got a lot of hot takes about what happened in the Week 11 slate and what all of it means moving forward. But of course, if you have a team that's 1-4 straight and that team has Pat Mahomes on it and they beat the Dallas Cowboys, who going into this week was in the conversation for best teams in the National Football League, everybody's saying it, everybody's asking it, are the Kansas City Chiefs back? Now, you know where I stand on this. I still don't trust that offense because they give the ball away at a high clip. They're second worst in turnovers in the National Football League with 22 of them. But are you back on that narcotic? Are you back on board with Kansas City Chiefs being one of the more feared teams in the NFL?
I think, Chris, I can say they'll be one of the more feared teams in the NFL without me being able to go a bridge too far and saying they're the best team in the NFL or they're the best team in the AFC, right? We mentioned that if we were going to do this, as our friend Jason Fitz does on Spain and Fitz, coming up in a little bit, college football playoff style with the NFL, they just got a head-to-head win against the Dallas Cowboys team that you and I both thought was the best in the NFL, or at the very least the best in the NFC, which this year makes you the best in the NFL.
Yes.
But that doesn't necessarily translate in the same way here. Now, Keyshawn Johnson, co-host of Keyshawn, J. Will and Max, on ESPN Radio 6 to 10 in the mornings, begs to differ.
They're the best team in AFC. In my opinion, they are the best team, and it's not even close. And I've said this many times over about the Tennessee Titans. I've said it about the Buffalo Bills. The 8-3 Tennessee Titans is a fake 8-3. The Buffalo Bills are now looking downward or upward to the New England Patriots, so to speak, no more looking downward, and they are now scared that the New England Patriots is going to catch them. The Kansas City Chiefs are not afraid of their division. The Raiders are raidering it. We know what Denver is. Chargers are still kind of hanging around. They beat the Pittsburgh Steelers last night, so that kind of gives them a little mojo. But the Kansas City Chiefs are a much better football team when they're clicking than the Chargers.
So, Chris, I understand where Key's coming from and what they're built like, but I still don't look at this Kansas City Chiefs team and feel any of that fear that he's talking about here. I see a more consistent football team. I see a more balanced football team now that the defense has shown up, but that fear of God's not back yet.
No, the fear of God is not back because the offense isn't back yet. And 141-point outburst against a division opponent in the Las Vegas Raiders, who you've owned in recent memory, especially when you play in on their home turf, it just doesn't feel like it's enough to buy all the way into them. I mean, listen, the last month of the season, you're talking about them only scoring north of 20 points that one time. So it makes it tough to buy in. And then you couple that with all of the turnovers that we've seen this team have throughout the course of the season. Yeah, I don't trust the Kansas City Chiefs offense. And if I don't trust them, then it's hard for me to trust this team overall because I'm not sure that the defense is built in a way that's going to allow them to have sustained success, especially when they consistently play against better competition like we're anticipating once they get in the tournament. So the defense showed up on a day that was important, on a day where the Dallas Cowboys offense was shorthanded with Amari Cooper being out and then CeeDee Lamb being out after the second quarter and then Tyron Smith not playing the game. But, I mean, if you're talking about the Dallas Cowboys offense being at full strength, I don't know that we would have that same outcome and what we saw yesterday. So there is a lot of show and prove left for me with Kansas City. Unfortunately, looking at the rest of their schedule, I don't know that they're going to play an opponent that's going to prove it to me before they get to the playoffs.
No, that's going to be the advantage for that team. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. So if we are measuring the top of the AFC right now, Chris, is this New England's at this point? Because betting on what we've seen so far, offensive line, defensive line, I absolutely get that part. I'm worried about Mac Jones when it comes to the playoffs, Chris. I mean, you know that time of year a lot better than I do, so you can correct me if I'm wrong. The rest of that I feel like can only shield you so much because eventually your quarterback's got to be able to make plays, and I don't know if he's going to have enough of those in that time of year just with the limited time under task that he's got in this league.
I hear what you're saying, but I also understand what Bill Belichick's formula for this team is, and it's very reminiscent of the 2001 Patriots and the irony of the Man in the Arena documentary being out there and having a chance to watch that. Looking forward to the episode dropping tomorrow, by the way. Shameless plug. But I just see a lot of the same types of schemes and the same type of personnel on that defensive side of the ball. And that's what led the way to that team being able to win the championship. Not to say that Tom Brady didn't make some plays. And you know that that last drive that he had in the Super Bowl to set up the Adam Vinatieri game-winning field goal was a huge drive for him. But, I mean, you're talking about Brady only having to make, you know, three or four throws throughout the course of the game to be the difference in the game. And you're hoping, if you're Bill Belichick or you're a Patriots fan, that by the time we get to that point when you're asking Mac Jones to do that, that he's capable of it. But I see a quarterback that's becoming more confident with every single game that he plays, and he should be because he's got a really good running game and a really good defense to lean on.
Chris, how dangerous do the Colts become in all of this? They're sitting at 9 right now at 6-5. But that win over the Bills, we've talked so much about what the story has been on the AFC and in general this NFL season, right? The Bills and the Kansas City Chiefs, the poster of where we thought we were going. Bombs away passing attack, big quarterbacks, huge arms, relied on as your primary playmakers. Now as defenses take that away, and now as we see that formula New England mentioned here, can the Indianapolis Colts replicate that enough down the stretch to all of a sudden make themselves dangerous now that they're hole up again on the offensive line? Quentin Nelson back in, helping pave the way for what we saw from Jonathan Taylor last night.
The Colts are a dangerous team, and they will go as far as their quarterback will let them. The thing that I don't trust about the Colts is their quarterback. Not to say that Carson Wentz isn't capable of making some high-end plays, making some big-time throws, because he is, and we've seen that. But I've also seen Carson Wentz make some boneheaded plays, and the ones that come to mind were in the second half of that Tennessee game where at the end of the fourth quarter and in overtime, he makes two critical errors that end up costing his team an opportunity to win a division football game and close the gap on the Titans. But, yeah, I think the Colts are going to be there just because this is one of the more talented teams top to bottom in the entire National Football League, and they have the best non-quarterback right now in Jonathan Taylor. I mean, the way that he's playing – 5 touchdowns, over 200 yards from scrimmage yesterday. It really is unbelievable. I think he's on a streak now of 8 straight games where he's got over 100 yards from scrimmage and a touchdown. Like, that's an incredible streak for him to be on, but that just shows you how talented he is. So, really special player behind a really good offensive line. And in that defense, we know what they're capable of when they're at their best. So, yeah, I think the Colts are absolutely going to be in the playoff picture. What's going to make it tough for them is that they're probably going to be a wild card because I think there's too much distance for them to close with the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, the home stretch of this season in that division that we said the Titans have been in the driver's seat on for quite a while, and this side of the NFL overall, this conference, going to be very difficult. This is a year where consistency is being rewarded, and so teams like the New England Patriots, like the Indianapolis Colts, are going to carry a lot more weight versus a team that always feels like it's got a sleeping giant lurking in Patrick Mahomes and that Kansas City Chiefs squad coming off a win against the Dallas Cowboys this weekend. We'll have plenty more to keep an eye on because the minute we think we have any idea of who is, quote, in pole position in the AFC, it's a myth. It doesn't exist. It'll change by the time we get to next week. Coming up next, though, very real was the situation called the Big Trouble in Little Caesars between LeBron James's Los Angeles Lakers and the Detroit Pistons. We'll get to the fallout next here on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. It's an Overreaction Monday, and so we had a lot of NFL talk, but Gojo, we got to switch up and talk about what happened in the association last night with my Los Angeles Lakers and the Detroit Pistons. And we heard from Dave McMiniman earlier. Some people are calling this the sequel to Malice in the Palace. I think the title is Big Trouble in Little Caesars. Like, that's where everybody is going with this. But clearly LeBron James getting tangled up with Pistons forward Isaiah Stewart, and it ends up being a situation where LeBron hits him in the eye. Stewart ends up getting a bloody eye, getting ejected from the game, requiring 5 stitches afterward, but the story was the scene and just how ugly it was, because Isaiah Stewart seemed to get more turned up the more he realized he was bleeding from his eye and all over his face. And so now the question becomes, what does the NBA do in terms of levying punishments for both players for creating that ugly scene last night?
Well, we got an answer on that, Chris. The NBA has announced they are suspending LeBron James one game for recklessly hitting Isaiah Stewart in the face, and that Stewart has been suspended for two games for, quote, escalating an on-court altercation by repeatedly and aggressively pursuing LeBron James. So remember, Chris, it is better to hit some no-name guy in the face than it is to chase after LeBron James.
I don't understand this, though. That is insult to injury, literally. LeBron James clearly wanted to take a shot at Isaiah Stewart. I don't think he wanted to cause that kind of damage, but I think this was a young player that got under his skin, that was kind of bodying him up, a guy that has a reputation for being a physical player, and LeBron James kind of got tired of it and took a shot at the guy. Now, Anthony Davis says in real time that LeBron told him that it was his bad. He didn't mean to hit him like that. But it felt like a situation where it was malicious with intent. And that's why I think Isaiah Stewart had a legitimate beef. Now, did he get carried away? No question about it. But the way that he was leaking, to say that LeBron is only getting one game suspension, I don't know. That just rubs me the wrong way, because the young fella has a legitimate beef. And his head coach, Dwayne Casey, said as much. Like, LeBron James was doing the most with that shot. It was unnecessary. And I think that's the frustration of where this Lakers team is bubbling up, along with Isaiah Stewart trying to be an agitation for the King.
Yeah, listen, this was LeBron James ticked off that a young player was putting hands on him, right?
Yes.
Guy aggravated him by touching him, because at this point in his career, LeBron James believes he's above having to deal with that kind of stuff. And he took a swipe at him, like, whether or not it was intentional. Like, I'm not buying what Anthony Davis or anyone else is saying. He did that with some gusto behind it to hit something. It happened to be the face, and a spot on the face that's going to bleed pretty profusely and make it look pretty cool. But the message on the other side of this, Chris, has kind of been like in The Departed, when Leo goes into that bar and he says there's guys that you punch and there's guys you can't punch, and you got to know the difference. Isaiah Stewart just found out the difference right here. Like, it ain't right. I don't think this is the right way to go about it, but we know, right, wrong, or indifferent, that LeBron James is not treated like everybody else. They're going to treat you, and this is always the line I heard in locker rooms, you're going to get treated fair, but fair ain't the same.
Yeah, I mean, the guys on the court did a better job blocking for LeBron James than they did blocking for Jonathan Taylor with the Indianapolis Colts. Like, I mean, that's what it was. Like, there was no world where Isaiah Stewart was going to get any closer than he was at the free throw line with LeBron James. They weren't going to let that happen. Like, this was one of those scenes where it's like a bunch of guys that were saying, we got to stand between LeBron. And it was coaches, players, the referees, like everybody was involved in trying to restrain Isaiah Stewart. And meanwhile, LeBron James is hanging out in the back, knowing that that guy can't get any closer to him, no matter what route he chose to try to take to get at Bron. But I just saying this from just looking at the optics of the situation, I understand where Isaiah Stewart was coming from, because it felt like a shot from LeBron James. There's no other way to interpret that. Like, LeBron wanted to send a message with that hit. I don't think he intended to hit him in the face like he did. It probably surprised him. But there was some intent beyond just the run-of-the-mill routine foul in the regular season. Like, that was not that. So there should be more accountability for LeBron James creating that scene. And that's why I'm a little bit surprised that the NBA and Adam Silver didn't give him a little more discipline. But like you said, LeBron James is the main attraction, even though the Los Angeles Lakers are struggling. And with the NBA, during this point in the calendar for them, there's no way that they want to take the main attraction off the court for more games than they have to.
Yep, they've already seen him off the court for injury, so they know what losing him means for business. That's the meal ticket here. Now, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, that whole would-be fight video is hilarious in a lot of ways here. Isaiah Stewart tries to give everyone the okey-doke, saying, no, I'm fine, and then takes off running after him again here. A security guard completely serves LeBron up on a silver platter, getting out of the way. But, Chris, my favorite part of all of that was Russell Westbrook adopting the posture of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish leprechaun in his fighting stance. Chris, I need to see someone go at Russ again to know if that's just his natural fighting posture.
Nah, that was hilarious. I'm so glad you pointed that out because I'm like, what is Westbrook doing? Why is he squaring off like that? Ain't nobody even near him trying to fight. Like, I mean, there's a few different guys that Isaiah Stewart would have had to get past in order to get to where Russell Westbrook was. So I'm like, what are you doing? Like, I mean, I know where Russell Westbrook grew up, and, you know, I know he's affiliated and, you know, some has postured like he's about that life. But still, like, come on, bro. Like, that nothing was going to happen after the initial scrum with Isaiah Stewart. Like, they were going to restrain him. There wasn't going to be, you know, another Malice in the Palace type of situation. That was not last night. So
no.
That part was probably funnier than the actual press conference that Russell Westbrook did post-game where he found out he got a technical foul. Like, that part was actually funnier, him squaring off the way that he was, knowing that he wasn't going to fight nobody last night.
You did mention it, though. In the whole midst of that, when Russell postures again, full Notre Dame leprechaun fighting style here, he somehow got teed up in all of this and kind of like a guy in a fight scene in a movie that all of a sudden looks down and realizes, wait a minute, I'm bleeding? Russ had no idea that he had gotten teed up until he was alerted in the post-game press conference after. Here's that.
What did the official say that you were assessed a technical for?
Who got a tech?
You did.
I got a tech? Oh, wow. Why'd I get a tech? I didn't know how to tag. Wow. That's interesting. Well, you know, that's just being Russell, I guess. When you Russell Westbrook, they just try to do anything, apparently. But whatever. I don't know why I don't know what I did, but whatever. They had to put it on somebody. I'm easy person to throw it on. Why not me?
Somewhere Roger Goodell and the taunting penalty crowd are sitting here like, see? See? This is what we're trying to help you guys with.
Oh, man. Listen, I don't know. With Russell Westbrook going into that posture and squaring off like he did on the court, I'm wondering if we could get Russell Westbrook to fight the winner of Deron Williams and Frank Gore.
Oh, man.
Is there any way we could arrange that? I mean, I'm pretty sure it's below the Brody, but I would just be interested to know if he's interested in that because I would love to see it.
He seemed like he had some interest in what was going on there, so maybe we can talk him into it, as I'm sure we'll get another Paul Brothers card with more former athletes looking to square up here. Maybe Russell Westbrook will throw his hat into the ring after, again, we had in Little Caesars Arena where the Detroit Pistons play, we had big trouble in Little Caesars, and now Isaiah Stewart, who got hit in the face to the point of bleeding by LeBron James, suspended for 2 games. LeBron James suspended for 1 game here. Make it make sense, because we sure can. Coming up next, though, Saquon Barkley will be back in action for the New York Giants tonight. Is it going to make a damn bit of difference? We'll get to that after we tell you about the Man in the Arena podcast. Join host Gautam Chopra as he explores what Tom Brady has meant to football and the world. The world. Man in the Arena. A new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion of Sports. The companion piece accompanies Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries. This 10-part podcast examines the ripple effects of Brady's career, things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, and fate. Fate! The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, ZipRecruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena, now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And, of course, you can stream the docuseries on ESPN+. Back after this, Candy and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Candy and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Candy. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And all guests appear via the Goodyear Hotline. And Gojo, that's where we got to go right now. Getting ready to wrap up the Week 11 slate with the New York Football Giants visiting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We bring in ESPN New York Giants reporter Jordan Renan. And Jordan, the big story is Saquon Barkley's return tonight for the New York Giants. Haven't seen him since Week 5 against Dallas. What can we expect to see from him in this offense? How many touches? And what kind of role is he going to have to play in order for the Giants to pull off the upset?
Well, I think we know, like, the Giants need Saquon Barkley to be a playmaker. We've seen that now for, you know, the whole, you know, 2021 season. Like, when he's there and when he's playing near the top of his game, hence, you know, back in Week 4 against New Orleans, this offense looks completely different. They had 485 yards that game. That is by far their best output this season. That was finally when he seemed to be rounding in form from the torn ACL he suffered last year. The next week, he hurts his ankle. Right now, 6 weeks later, he's just coming back. The offense has stumbled along. So it's going to be tough, though. I heard what Lewis Riddick just said. It kind of opened my eyes. I mean, it's just going to be hard for him to make that big an impact because you're talking about he's probably going to split time, right? Devontae Booker, who's also kind of banged up. If he's a go, like they'll probably split some time there. Maybe Saquon will get 60% or whatever. And then you're talking about they're playing a team that pretty much nobody runs against, right? I mean, the Bucs are number two in the NFL in run defense. So he has his work cut out for him. Hasn't played in 6 weeks. Number two rush defense he's facing. And he's, you know, not going to be in the typical Saquon role that everyone's expecting, you know, has expected from him in the past of playing like 90, 95% of the snaps because, I mean, this doesn't make sense coming off an injury where, you know, he had to sit out for 6 weeks.
So, Jordan, if it's hard to necessarily figure out just how much of an impact his return has, can we maybe have an easier time stating how much of an impact the loss of Logan Ryan on the other side is going to have on this Giants defense?
Yeah, huge. I mean, you're talking about the guy who's essentially the leader of the defense at this point. He's a captain. They already lost their signal caller, Blake Martinez, in the middle of the defense, the middle linebacker, earlier this year. Now to be without Logan Ryan. What Logan said earlier in the week before the positive COVID test came out is that when you play Tom Brady, you have to be so careful with everything you do, right? Any little tell, he's going to figure it out. Like he knows, you know, if the way you line up or if you start to blitz too early, like he's going to recognize it, call it out, and then exploit it. And so to not have Logan Ryan in there and have to sub him in with Julian Love, who has played before, at least you know, he's a guy who has experience playing and even starting in this league. But look, it's a big, big loss for this Giants defense, especially in this game and playing that quarterback.
Jordan, the Giants have quietly won two of the last three games going into their bye week, and we saw a bit of a resurgence in the second half of last season from Joe Judge's bunch. Is the expectation in the building that the team will be able to have that kind of performance and potentially get back into the playoff picture? Is that how John Mara is looking at this and judging this season?
I think it is, because if you look at this team, they're getting healthier finally. That's a big thing, right? Their offense is finally getting healthier. Not just Saquon, but I'm talking about Kenny Galladay. He's going to be maybe the healthiest he's been this year. He missed three games as well, came back in the game before the bye week, but now he had 2 weeks from the bye. So you're getting him back. You're getting Saquon back. You get Andrew Thomas, their starting left tackle, back. So this team should be significantly better. And if you look at their schedule, granted, tonight, tough game, right? On the road, Monday night against Tom Brady, who, you know, the last time Tom Brady lost three in a row, you know, some of these Giants players were like, you know, under like 5 years old or whatever. I mean, it was a long, long time ago when that happened, which is crazy to think about. But they have a fairly reasonable late season schedule. So I think for them to put together some wins is entirely possible, because it should be a better team. Their defense is playing better. They're healthier on offense. They're going to be way more explosive. And the quality of competition is going to dip a little bit down the stretch. So there's some winnable games. The question is, have they dug too deep a hole already, right? Because if they can't win tonight, they're sitting there at 3-7. I mean, realistically, can you get back in the playoff picture if you're 3-7? Right, I mean, not to get to 9 wins, which you would say is playoff picture. What they would have, they only allow them for one more loss in them. The final 7 games of the season. That's tough.
Jordan Renan, our ESPN Giants reporter, with us on the Goodyear Hotline, and I agree with you on that point, Jordan. But everything you just described to me sounds a little more calm coming off the bye than what we have been used to. Can the same be said about the conversation around Joe Judge and his future in the organization, some of the jobs that were on the line seemingly heading into the bye week?
Yeah, I think Joe Judge, look, the organization, they've gone through head coaches 2 years at a time, the last, you know, two previous times. They really, really don't want to make another coaching change. That is not in the thought process of this organization right now. I think Joe Judge is pretty safe in that regard. That part of it, I think, is calm. Obviously, the one that's a little more uncertain would be the general manager position with Dave Gettleman, right? Because he's in year 4, and we're talking about 4 years of not winning, especially if they don't end the season really strong here. That's the one I think you should keep your eye on. I think you should feel pretty good that something really crazy would probably have to happen for the Giants to want to move on from Joe Judge in any way, shape, or form at the end of this year.
Jordan, we're talking about the job security for the general manager and for the head coach. Where is the organization at with Daniel Jones, and has he shown enough for them to be in a position where they feel confident in potentially exercising a fifth-year option and doing an extension?
I laugh because, I mean, we just – the fact that we're sitting here three and a half – you know, in the middle of year three, and we don't have the answer to that question – and it's not all – it's not really Daniel Jones's fault, because what have they put around him? Have they given him a capable offensive line to work with? He hasn't had the weapons this year. There's just been a lot of limitations for him. And, look, the organization, I'm telling you, is still really high on him. They think this guy is good enough. He does enough good things that they can win with him. But, I mean, everybody wants to see it. So I think these final eight games of the season this year – with the Giants' offense healthier, are going to go a long way with determining what the Giants do with Daniel Jones moving forward. But, I mean, he still has another year left on his rookie contract next year. That makes him a cheap option. There's always the fifth-year option after that. There's franchise tags after that. So they don't have to rush into that contract and making that decision. As you've seen, teams like what the Cleveland Browns are with Baker Mayfield, right? They're kind of in that spot. I think you can drag it out a little bit, and I think especially since we don't know. Like, that's where the Giants are.
A lot of uncertainty down the stretch of this season, but as Jordan mentioned, it's going to be interesting to watch and see if this Giants team can slowly creep and crawl their way back into the playoff picture here. Jordan, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the game tonight, and I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Hey, you too, guys. Enjoy. Speak soon.
Jordan Renan, our ESPN Giants reporter, joining us ahead of the Giants game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Monday Night Football. But coming up next, Monday Night Football is going to be great. What we saw this weekend was better. Large bodies in motion heading towards the end zone. Fix Six Forever. Let's get it on ESPN Radio.
Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. If your pet is hurt in a car accident, Progressive pays up to $1,000 in vet expenses with free pet coverage. Visit progressive.com. Now, Mike, all our guests appear on the Goodyear Hotline. We got to give a shout out to the guests that came through on the show today. Dave McMenamin giving us the latest on the big trouble in Little Caesars, what happened between the Lakers and the Pistons last night. Tyler Fulgham trying to get your money right for Monday Night Football. Mina Kimes, ESPN NFL analyst and co-host of NFL Live. And then, of course, ESPN New York Giants reporter Jordan Renan getting us set for Monday Night Football between the Giants and the Bucks. If you missed any of it, go to the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, subscribe. And now, Mike, we've reached the portion of our program where it's time for us to go three and out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is Three and Out.
Boy, oh boy, do we have an exciting day here on Three and Out. Let's start off with some really good news, Chris, because we remember Tiger Woods, who suffered several injuries to his right leg and foot in a car crash back in February, posted video of himself on Twitter hitting golf balls for the first time since that accident with the comment, "Making progress." The 45-year-old Woods wearing a compression sock and sleeve on that right leg while going and putting in work on the range certainly got a ton of people excited.
Now, did Tiger Woods have the Succession theme music behind it like Russell Wilson did?
No, did you know
he,
what?
Did he go that route with the video? Because I haven't seen it yet.
He didn't, Chris, and that proves that he's still got a lot to learn, even being the golf goat.
No, but in all seriousness, man, it's good to see Tiger Woods getting back to doing something that he loves, being able to at least swing the golf club and hit the golf ball. I'm not sure if he'll ever get back to being competitive again like we saw Tiger in the past, but I'm just glad that from a quality of life standpoint, the guy seems like he's going to get back on track. And after seeing that horrific accident and knowing what happened in the immediacy, the aftermath, I'm just glad that he has some semblance of being able to get back to, you know, being, you know, in the physical shape that he wants to be in. So good on Tiger Woods. I'm glad he released that video.
Yep. He said his future. He has not said anything about his future. Justin Thomas said in a recent podcast that he believes the 15-time major champ is going to try to make a comeback. We will wait and see and continue to wish him well. But, Chris, as we keep moving right here, the Sacramento Kings have promoted associate head coach Alvin Gentry to interim head coach after relieving Luke Walton of his duties. This coming a day after Luke Walton had to watch during the Jazz Kings game as a fan courtside puked all over the court. And Chris, I find it pretty bleak that that was the last thing he had to see before the Kings ultimately decided to relieve him of his duties.
Well, the product that he was putting on the court led to a fan that was sitting courtside decide to upchuck. So I don't necessarily feel bad for Luke Walton. It's not like he didn't have opportunities. Like, his record over the past 3 years hasn't been stellar. I want to say it's something like 68-93. That ain't great. So, yeah, this is an opportunity that he got after being the head coach at the show, and it didn't necessarily work out for him in his second stop. So it's a production business, and Luke Walton didn't go out there and produce. Now, there's a lot of challenges that comes along with being the head coach of the Kings. And talent is probably the biggest one of them, but to not show any signs of progress, I think that's what everybody's judging this on, and that's why that organization decided to make the move, because it became clear that it wasn't going to get better under his leadership.
Chris, I applaud you for being a true professional and actually mustering up the courage to talk about Kings basketball when all I was going to talk about was that guy yakking and making direct eye contact with Rudy Gobert during it. Seems a little creepy for both parties involved, but I'm sure that guy, knowing how drunk you have to be, allegedly, probably, to puke courtside at a game like that, had that feeling of waking up the next morning with an uncomfortable taste in his mouth, having to text a friend and ask, did I really throw up last night? And
well,
find out the
uncomfortable
truth.
Is there any other way to consume Kings basketball, though, Mike?
No, no,
like,
listen.
Like, I don't know that that's a
sober,
I don't know that that's
got good
sober
access to drinks. It's all, you know, no, it's a fair point here. Kings basketball, yeah. Best consumed with copious amounts of alcohol. Three and Out here on Canty and Gold Jr. is brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. We are a show by big people for big people, Chris. And this weekend in college football may have been the best weekend for big people scoring the football in recorded history. The thick six is something that I've adopted going back to last December here. Anytime a large person gets their hands on the football and decides to take that thing to the house. And this weekend alone, Chris, we had Georgia defensive tackle Jordan Davis get loose on a designed rush against Charleston Southern to bolster his Heisman campaign. We had offensive lineman slash fullback Trey Jones at South Carolina get in the end zone against Auburn on a touchdown pass. We had Myron Tungavailoa-Mosa, Notre Dame defensive tackle, go scoop and score against Georgia Tech. Gentle Hunt, a D lineman at Florida A&M, took one to the crib. UMass Dartmouth even got Tyler Gimmer, an offensive tackle, a touchdown on a hook and ladder play, Chris. It was nice. Immaculate, and the Big Hip Boys have never looked better in a weekend.
Yeah, they stole that one from Varsity Blues, the one to Billy Bob. But I'm with you on that one, man. I'm all about the big fellas being able to get into the end zone. And shout out to Kirby Smart for actually doing that for Jordan Davis, though, being able to try to make his case to win the Heisman, a defensive player, defensive tackle at that, trying to throw his hat in the ring for one of the most prestigious awards. And I got to say, Gojo, with everything that's going on in the landscape of college football in the Heisman race, it doesn't seem like it's outside of the realm of possibility for the big fella to get that done. I'm just saying.
Listen, we can thick six our way all the way to a trip to New York for Jordan Davis. I would love to see him walk into the Heisman ceremony the same way he's walked onto the field. Large, carrying a 60-pound workout metal chain, letting everybody know what it's about to be. Speaking of what it's about to be, stick around here on ESPN Radio. Spain and Fitz up next.